Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Hey everyone, before we get into today's episode, I just want to let you know that our friends at Outdoor Edge have partnered with some great brands to help bring your fall full circle with their Field to Freezer to Fire giveaway. Here's how you enter. Go to their Facebook page and sign up to win some awesome prizes and packages from brands including Yeti, Weston, Bradley Smokers, and more. These are some awesome products that will help you process your game, keep your game in the freezer, and eventually cook it for your table. You have until January 15th to sign up, so take advantage of that. Outdoor Edge in the Field to Freezer to Fire giveaway. Go to their Facebook page and make it happen. And if you decide to purchase any products from the website, enter the discount code NATION30. That's the word NATION with the number 30 after that. No spaces. NATION30. And you will receive 30% off your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. Brought to you by Vortex Optics. What is going on, everybody? It is the last episode here on the Nine Finger Chronicles for 2020. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a good thing. I'm sitting here in my office editing this podcast and I'm looking out the window and I'm going to say we got close to 8 inches on the ground already. and it's still snowing pretty hard here in Iowa. So for anybody who is in the Midwest who, I don't know, might have a decent late season food source and your season may not be over yet, this snow could potentially help you. So, I don't know, just think about some options that you could take advantage of in this late season time frame with all the snow on the ground. I don't know why I'm saying that, but it is the truth. So there's that. But today we have a really awesome episode, and anytime Justin Czar is on the podcast, we have a really good episode. And today is a straight up reflect and look forward episode where we talk about 2020. We BS about what we're going to do in 2021. I can't believe how shitty this year was, but awesome at the same time, and how fast that it went as well. So we, I don't know, man, it's just been a weird year. I loved it and hated it all at the same time. And I'm really looking forward to things to change and, for the Sportsman's Nation to grow, the, Nine Finger Chronicles, the Hunting Gear podcast all showed growth. And I'm just really excited for what's coming in 2021. And the cool thing is the YouTube channel, right? I'm going to be putting on a cooking show. I don't know how good it's going to be. It's going to be some of my favorite venison and wild game and fish recipes. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, so this episode though today with Justin is more or less of a BS session, but we do a little reflecting. We talk about, I don't know, goals. Did we accomplish our goals in 2021 or 2020? What are our goals for 2021? All that good stuff. So we do have to do a commercial real quick, and it is Vortex Optics. And man, if you listen to this podcast, you hear me talk about Vortex a lot and how awesome their optics are. This is no bullshit. This is a company that participates in the space that they market to. These guys are knowledgeable about optics, but at the same time, knowledgeable on how to use their optics and what optics to use in different scenarios, whether you're a whitetail hunter, a western elk hunter, a mule deer hunter, antelope. You know, are you a gun hunter? Are you a tree stand hunter? Are you a bow hunter? All these different things, right? So the people who work there are very knowledgeable. They can help you out. Their optics are of the highest quality, and they have price points for everybody. Spotting scopes, range finders, rifle scopes, binoculars, anything you want, you can get it. And I would suggest calling them up or visiting their website, vortexoptics.com, and taking advantage of all the information on their website. And at the same time, don't forget their VIP warranty. Now get this, if you break it, all you have to do is send it back to them, and they'll fix it and send it back to you for free, no charge. That's a win-win, and that's worth its weight in gold for the life of your optic. So take advantage of that as well. Other than that, my friends, I don't know. Happy New Year, and enjoy this episode. In 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me once again, Mr. Justin Czar. What's up, brother?
Hey, buddy. How you doing? How was your Christmas?
Well, once again, I feel like I ate my weight in sugar and drank my weight in bourbon. So it was one of those types of Christmases, if that makes sense.
There's nothing wrong with either one of those things, in my opinion. So it makes life worth living, my friend.
Right, right. So here's, you know, I don't know about what you normally do on a Christmas versus what you did this year. But
during COVID Christmas?
Yeah, COVID Christmas. This year, normal years, huge family gatherings, right? Multiple, three of them. You know, three or four of them, and they're big. Lots of people there. We play a lot of cards. They're active. This year, two of them really, and they were just, you know, like real low key, real quick. Like we were at my dad's for 3 hours and then we left. So, yep. Typically, and the reason I say I drink my weight in bourbon is when I'm playing cards and interacting with family, I drink a lot slower, but. But
when I'm by myself, yeah, I just, you know,
my kids are balls deep in their brand new presents, and I'm sitting on in the recliner. The bourbon goes down just a little bit faster.
I understand. Somehow, I don't know how this happened to me this year, but I came out relatively unscathed in the department of having to build crap for my kids after Christmas. The last 2 years, it's been hell.
Yeah.
My daughter got one of those giant like doll houses a couple years ago, and it took me hours to put the thing together. And like, luckily this year was, I'm not sure I put anything together.
Yeah,
this year it was pretty freaking nice.
But your kid, how old is your youngest?
He is four.
Four. Okay.
So, yeah.
They're probably starting to get out of the have to put a whole bunch of shit together stage, and it's more like electronics and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's getting to be that. But it's also like the poor little guy, he just gets all the big hand-me-downs from the older kids. So, like, we're not rebuying. And we've learned our lessons too, probably more selective when we're buying stuff for our kids. Like, That one seems like it's going to be a bitch to put together. Let's go to the next thing on the list.
Yeah. So on one of the last episodes, I talked to my buddy Nate Thomas from the Land and Legacy, or excuse me, the Missouri Woods and Water podcast. And he told me his wife bought three new bicycles and he had to put all three of them together in the same day. So
it's like hell.
3.5 hours of putting bicycles together. I'll be honest with you, man. And I never take advantage of my finger, me not having a finger. I don't ever do it. But one time I walked into Target and I asked them if I could buy the floor model of this desk because I didn't want to have to put it together. And I threw the feel sorry for me because
I'm disabled.
It was, I felt like crap after I did it. Not too bad, you know, it's just like, I felt like crap.
Do you have a handicapped placard in your vehicle? Or
no.
Or you get the handicapped parking?
No. No,
do you
I
use
don't.
A crossbow, Dan?
I probably could. I think I could, actually. I think I could.
Go for it. We'll cut your subscribers in half by next week.
Well, after that comment about me using my... I guess I don't even know. Is a missing finger a disability these days?
Everything's a disability these days, yeah. Dan.
That's a fact.
Doesn't matter. It's your mindset.
All right. So let me ask you this. Kind of playing off of the eat too much food. You know, you dropped some weight. Was that the beginning of this year?
Yeah, but no, wait, dude. I didn't put it all back on. It's funny you say that because I was thinking as you were mentioning, I've been pretty good.
Yeah.
So we did a couple of my buddies and I did like a Biggest Loser challenge thing a couple of years ago. And I'm normally like, since I was like, I think I was 230 at the time. I think I got down to like somewhere in the 190s, probably mid to high 190s by the end of that.
Yeah.
And I've been pretty good about hanging in like the high upper 190s, lower 200s, somewhere right around there. And that was like 3 years ago we did this. And I've been pretty good. I've got up to like maybe 210 down to 190. I kind of fluctuate in this weird like 20-pound range. And I'm definitely on the high side of that right now. So I was already thinking like, man, after the holidays, I need to lay off the carbs a little bit. It's been out of control.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, so my two buddies, it's Dustin DeCrew and Matt Miller, we were on like a group text and we were texting over the holiday. And they're like, man, we need to do another... you know, challenge. We're getting pretty fat again. And I was like, sweet. Cause I was going to do it anyways. I'm just give me a little bit more motivation since we're all kicking in some money. So we decided we're starting after the new year. So I've just been using the last like couple days to just carb up.
Oh yeah.
Eat everything I can get my hands on. So I want to be as fat as possible during the weigh-in.
Yeah.
And then hopefully I think we're going into like May 1st, we're giving it like a good 4 months. So we're going to see what happens in the next 4 months. It's actually kind of exciting. I don't mind it.
Yeah.
So it'd be good for me.
Well,
I think I'm probably sitting at like, if I had to guess, man, I hope I'm not 215 right now, but I'm definitely at that 210 mark for sure.
Yeah. So man, it was like, for Father's Day, in 2020, my wife got me a, a workout program. She goes to this workout fitness center, and you know, they jump up and down and lift weights, and they make you sweat, and they do kickboxing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so she bought me that for Father's Day, and my first weigh-in was 240 on the button, and I was in bad shape. I mean, I was fat and gross, and I was living that tree stand hunter lifestyle, if you want to put it that way. And and then in that 8-week program, I got down to 212. So I dropped like 26 pounds or whatever in, or 28 pounds, almost 30 pounds in that 8-week session. And then hunting season started. So I wasn't going on those, I wasn't going to class like I was. My diet kind of was shot, because on the weekends or throughout the week, I'm basically just eating whatever I can, when I can, before I go to the tree stand or after the tree stand. So I'm no longer back on this diet. And then, you know, there's these periods of time where, okay, now I have to catch up on work, because I'm hunting. And then like the consistency of the workout and the consistency of the diet all kind of, went to shit. And now today for me, as we're recording this, today was my day one getting back on the wagon and, getting back so I can, you know, the goal is to just be in the greatest shape of my life come September when I go on my elk hunt. So that's the goal anyway.
Nothing wrong with that. No. Good to have goals. It's all about the diet, man. I'll tell you that.
Oh, it is.
Especially at our advanced age now in our 40s, diet is the most important thing.
It is.
I think I read or heard something one time where somebody said, like, you can't outrun a bad diet.
No, not anymore.
And it's like, that is so true. And my house is littered with cookies and cakes and pies and Christmas candy and just more shit than you can imagine right now.
Dude, that's the hardest part. That's the hardest part for me is I got three kids, and my wife, she is really good at only eating a little bit of something. Me, I crush things.
I'll eat it all.
Yes. It's like, hey, we need more ice cream. I just bought a gallon the other day. Yeah, well, me, I got into it while I was watching Vikings. So, you know, it is what it is.
I understand. Chips Ahoy. I think Oreos is my thing. But what I'll tell you is this much. Like, when I get started on this whole thing and, like, I actually start – I've been pretty good about working out. I've worked out this whole time.
Yeah.
They shut our gym down for a while for COVID. It opened back up. Now we have some stupid mandate where we have to wear our mask, like, while we're working out at the gym, which is just absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
It's like the worst thing in the world. So I've just been working out at home on the exercise bike and kettlebells and stuff until this stupid thing is lifted. But I'll say, like, once I get started and you start seeing results, like, it's very motivating to keep going and not, like, you feel guilty, like, oh man, I went to the gym and I crushed it today. I did awesome. Like, and you come home and the thought of negating all that work by eating a bunch of Oreos, you're like, God damn it. Like I didn't do that for nothing. I can't come home and then cheat on my diet. So it kind of keeps me more honest when I'm doing both. Yeah. So yeah, dude, I'm looking forward to it. Should be good.
I'm also the person who I'm financially motivated as well, because I'm paying $90 a month for this thing. And yep. My wife is paying $90 a month. So I look at the box of cereal and, or whatever, I got my choice from Hostess cupcakes or carrots. And I say to myself, well, I'm not paying $90 to tread water. You know what I mean? So, you know, I go to the carrots because I'm kind of a cheap ass when it comes to stuff like that.
Yep. Nothing wrong with that.
All right. So that's kind of like a fitness type thing that we're planning on both, sounds like, getting back into. But let's talk about 2020. It's been a shit show of a year, kind of all over the place in the world. What are some of the highlights and lowlights, I guess, for you, maybe in the world of hunting that we can talk about?
Sure. Man, I mean, honestly, I had one of my best years ever hunting-wise. Started off, killed a turkey in Illinois in the spring. I only got one. I hunted my ass off for a turkey this spring and finally did get one. But that was cool because my oldest son was with me. He was 7 at the time. So he was with me in the blind when I shot that bird. So started off cool there. You know, summertime obviously was all kind of Corona fest at that point. We just spent a bunch of time on the lake and did a lot of fishing this summer, which was cool. Rolled into fall, shot an antelope in Wyoming, which was awesome. Came home, was supposed to go on an elk hunt in Colorado that got canceled because everyone got COVID in camp. So that was probably the low point of my season because we were halfway to Colorado when that happened. So that was kind of a bummer. The elk hunt got canceled, kind of only hunted Nebraska for a while, saw a huge buck, almost shot it. Turns out someone else did shoot that deer later in the season in November, and the outfitter we were hunting with sent us some pictures of it. Just a really cool deer. Whitetail season wise, like here in Illinois, man, it was awesome. Got my 8-year-old son his first deer. Yeah. On October 15th, he shot a little year and a half old buck. And then I killed a buck on October 28th, killed another one on November 7th, and I was done just like that. You know, it was like the blink of an eye. It felt like my season was over. So if anything, like a low light would be I didn't get to hunt as much as I normally do, which was a weird kind of thing, yeah. Right? I mean, it's cool to be tagged out, and it's awesome to have had a great season, but I'm missing the chase right about now.
So was COVID to blame for the awkwardness in your schedule? I mean, for me, I got to, I guess I probably could have pushed the envelope a little bit more to get out and hunt a little bit more, but I don't know. I decided not to and just stick with the main trips this year. I did get a chance to hop out a couple times during that, you know, October timeframe to try to, you know, get something, you know, patterned or check trail cameras or do whatever, just to get out and hunt basically. So are you saying that you hunted less because of COVID or just life in general?
I think I hunted less cause I was out of buck tags.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, I would have, you know, my wife was surprisingly pretty cool about all my hunting this year. Not to say that I didn't hunt a lot, cause I mean, I did between going to Wyoming and then ending up in Nebraska and then, you know, deer hunting back here at home. I just, you know, I was done on November 7th. So it effectively cut my season, you know, 2 months, let's say shorter than it normally is. So, you know, after that November 7th, I haven't really hunted a ton.
Yeah.
Just because I honestly don't really need any more meat. My son keeps bugging me to go out. He wants to try to shoot a doe. And I'm kind of just trying to put him off because it's like he already shot one deer. It's like I don't want him to be too spoiled. I guarantee I could take him out. I guarantee I could take him out and we could shoot a doe somewhere like before the end of the season. But like kind of don't want him to shoot another deer secretly.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, all right, I took him out last weekend. Unfortunately, we saw 6-year-and-a-half-old bucks came in, and he could have shot a couple of them, but he wanted something bigger than what he had already shot, which is insane to me at 8 years old.
Right.
But I was also kind of secretly relieved, like, okay, we don't need to shoot another little buck. We have plenty of meat in the freezer. Like, we're good. So I was secretly happy that we didn't see any does. But, yeah, I mean, it was definitely a weird year. I think COVID probably gave me more time to hunt, yeah. You know, just because, you know, most of the kids' sports were canceled for the most part. My son still had baseball for a decent part of the early into October. But outside of that, there's nothing else to do. So when I told my wife, like, hey, I want to go hunting, there was no like, oh man, we want to go to the pumpkin patch or we want to go apple picking.
Oh,
or
yeah.
It was like, there was really nothing else to do. And so it was like, all right, you know, go hunting, have fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was actually probably helped me a little bit.
Yeah. I tell you what, it was, I would say that as far as a schedule was concerned, having the kids on a hybrid model, learning or at home full time, really screwed me because their learning, their Zoom meetings were at 3:00 or 3:30 in the afternoons. So that led all the way up until, you know, 3, 4, or, you know, 4:30 and, leaving the house at 4:30 and trying to get into the tree stand. I don't have any properties that are that close. I don't live on, you know, a farm that I can hunt. So I would say as far as the being able to be flexible in the schedule kind of sucked, but the ability to plan in advance was better this year than it was in past years. So if I could get a daycare provider or if I could get my mother-in-law or my dad to help out, then I, you know, my wife was cool. She's just like, hey, do I have backup? Yep, you got backup. Or I can send two kids over, you know, I can send my youngest kid and my older boy to the grandpa's for a day and a half and they'll be back. And yeah, okay. If that's what if that's, you know, if you can cover the bases, then you can go. And if I plan, man, it was a good year.
Yeah. Same here. I'm lucky that my wife does not work. She unfortunately has to stay home with the kids, much to her dismay sometimes. You know, but it certainly makes my life a little bit easier in terms of flexibility for stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not so good on the monetary side of the world, but sometimes you trade for some of that flexibility. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I think it was a pretty good fall, man. I can't really complain other than, like I said, it was strange to be tagged out, you know, early-ish in the season and miss those weeks of hunting. But hey, it is what it is. I can't complain too much. I'm sure there's plenty of guys out there with unfilled tags that would love to be in that position.
That's fact.
You know, so
that's fact. So let me ask you this. Me and you, our main farms that we hunt, we've been hunting them for several years, right? We kind of know the strategy. We know the tactics that we need. We know, hey, I need to be in this wind direction, or I need to, you know, wait for certain times of year or whatever. Right. The reason I'm asking this is because this time of year, when it comes to podcasts or articles, you'll see a lot of what would you do different in 2020, or thinking back on strategy and tactics. How do you answer some of those questions or have any type of thought process on what you would do different when you kind of know what you have to do because you've been hunting a farm or a property for so many years?
Sure. Well, I think that's one of the things about just outdoor media in general that can sometimes be misleading, is we always need something to talk about.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you're not going to get eyeballs on whatever your content is, whether it's written, whether it's video, whether it's social media, it doesn't matter. Like, you need eyeballs on it. So everybody's always looking for a new angle to come up with something to talk about to get people interested. And when, you know, the reality is, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, both the deer I killed on farms that I've been hunting for a long time, like, I kind of just know, you know, what the deer do on those farms at different times of the year. Now, it may change a little bit from year to year, depending on outside factors, whether it's pressure or crop rotation or acorns or, you know, what, you know, water sources, whether we are in a flood or a drought, you know, there's things that are going to change. So you're always going to have kind of the minutia, like the having to move things around and make decisions based on that year's intelligence. But like, from year to year to year to year, deer tend to exhibit the same general behavior and travel patterns on these farms. You know, whether it was 10 years ago or whether it's today, they're still kind of doing the same thing. It's not even the same deer anymore, but they all behave similarly.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not really sure I learned anything, to be honest with you, this year, other than like, okay, what I'm doing is working, so let's just keep doing that.
Right.
You know, it's just, I don't necessarily think that I need to come up with some sort of profound, you know, lesson learned
breakthrough
from my season. You know, it's like, I didn't really learn a whole lot. I went to the first buck that I killed out of is a stand that three or four different people have killed good bucks out of in the last 5 or 6 years, you know, that hunt this farm. It's just a good spot. You know, I'm certainly not the first guy to have killed a good buck out of it. The second buck that I killed was definitely more of a run and gun, right? I went in that night and got up in a tree and killed that deer. And that was based on movement that I had observed the last 2 or 3 seasons and why I was in that tree. So there's always stuff to be learned, you know, but, I mean, I'll just keep doing that. You know, the more you can use your past experiences to base your future decisions, like, I feel like the more successful you're going to be.
Right.
There's the old saying we've heard a million times of like the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting the same results. I think I've fallen victim in the past to like having a tree stand in a spot that I'm convinced is a good spot, but I never kill anything there or I never see anything there. But I keep going back because I'm like, one of these times, like, I know this is it, that this is going to be it. They got to come through here. And it's just, it never happens, but I keep going back. I think if anything, I need to break away from some of those spots that I'm tied to just from an emotional perspective. Like, I want to prove that it's a good spot. And I guess after enough years and I've proven it's not a good spot, it's time to go somewhere else.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm to the point on my main farm that I spend a majority of my rut on is I've identified the pinch points, the travel corridors, the bedding areas, right? And yes, some of that can change year after year, or maybe sometimes it changes when they come through and log it like they did about four or five years ago, right? And then that changes the construction of the vegetation in there and whatever. But for the most part, the terrain is the same, and they're coming through the same areas at some point. It's just, it's again, kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but it's reinforcing the fact that you can be 100% prepared, have the greatest access, have your tree or your stand in the best tree, and the deer or group of deer that you want to kill don't come through that area while you are in the tree stand. And that when you say it like that and think about it like that, it almost pisses you off a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, deer hunting has a tendency to piss you off from time to time.
Right.
I always wanted to make a shirt that just said deer hunting sucks, or I hate deer hunting, like one of the two.
Right.
It's like so much of it can be so dang frustrating sometimes. And like I said, we get so emotionally involved in some of the decisions that we make that it's hard to break free. It's hard to sometimes decouple your emotion from like your reasoning and your brain and what your brain knows you should be doing, but what your heart tells you should be doing.
Yeah. I tell you what, I've this year, and I know it's kind of, I don't know. It doesn't hold as much weight this year because I shot my buck off the ground as I'm walking to my tree stand, you know, based off of where he was at and where I was at connected at this time and space. Right. And that's how, that's how I got my deer. And there was no real strategy or tactic involved with that hunt. But I don't know.
I was thinking about this the other day.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're saying, right? So we say that to a certain degree, your hunt this year was just luck. It was right place at the right time.
Yeah.
But isn't every hunt always kind of that?
Yes.
Right?
I mean,
I know we like to think that we are taking credit for like our great, you know, ability to outwit and outsmart these deer. And some people seem to be better at it than others, but like sometimes it's just about being in the right place at the right time.
Absolutely.
You know, so sometimes I think we give ourselves maybe too much credit. Other times maybe not enough credit. So
I had
a weird shower thought I had the other day.
I have multiple, you know, experiences with that same, you know, train of thought this year. You know, it's just like, okay, I'm going into a tree stand that I killed my deer out of last year. It is the perfect bedding area. I have the perfect wind. Oh man, I made it in here and not a deer got bumped. I made it into my tree stand, pulled my bow. And now the wind, the thermals are right. It's just, you get excited as you're walking to, you're sitting in that tree, you're waiting for the sun to come down and the deer to start moving up a little bit. And one doe comes through. It's just like, what just happened? There's this huge letdown and you're like, God, you know, son of a gun.
I'll give you a funny story about that. So the biggest deer I've ever killed was, I don't know, 157, something like that. That's my biggest buck. In the morning that I shot him, I did not want to go to the tree stand that I was in. I wanted to go to a different stand, but I was hunting with another guy in this farm, and he didn't know how to get to certain tree stands because he hadn't hung them. He was kind of a novice hunter. So I sent him to the tree stand that I wanted to be in. And I was like, crap, he's going to go to the stand I want to be in. There's really only like two other stands at work on a morning hunt on this wind, so I'm just going to go here. And I go to that stand, I end up killing the biggest buck I've ever shot in my life. You know, and I think about that sometimes because it's like, I did hang that stand. I picked that tree. I did everything, you know, and ended up killing the deer out of it. But like the reality is, if it wasn't for this other guy being there that morning, I would have never went there. I would have went to a completely different stand and never been there. So it was like all these little chance things that always kind of happened to us along the way that happen to just put you in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I guess that the same could be said for probably everything in life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you met your wife, you know, what were you doing that day that, you know, you decided to go to that place instead of somewhere else or whatever the case may be. There's all, you know, you could do that with everything in life.
So let's talk about that this for a second. The people who kill big deer or mature deer or we're comparing Hunter A against Hunter B. What do you think is the biggest category, if we're going to put all these these characteristics or identifiers into categories, what are, in your opinion, the biggest or the most important category when it comes to a successful bow hunter?
I think that I kind of always have broken this down into two separate things. Like number one, just having, I call it just almost like an intuition. Some people just seem to know. They're like deer whisperers.
Yeah.
You know, they just seem to know that this is going to be a good spot.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And now those people tend to also put in a significantly greater amount of maybe time and effort and energy into scouting and learning and observing. But like, there's also just, there's no denying the fact that some people are just better at it than other people, right? In their woodsmanship and their ability to predict where deer are going to be at a specific time, you know? So that's kind of like the first half. Like you have to be I call that part like the good hunter, right? Somebody's got to be a good hunter. The second part of that is you got to be a good killer. You have to be able to execute at the time when you get a shot. And I know some people that are good at both of those things. And then I know other people that are much better at one of those aspects than the other. And that can certainly affect their success. Like over the years, I've traditionally looked at myself as a pretty good hunter, not so much as a good killer, at least for a period of time. I feel like I've gotten much, much better at that in the last 5 to 6 years, knock on wood. But I definitely went through a period of time where I was a much better hunter than I was a killer. I missed a lot of opportunities, errant shots, you know, just things going wrong at that moment of truth, which some people just seem to be clutch, right? It's the guys that have the ice in their veins when it comes time to make that kill. And that's such an important thing. And that's something that I'm not sure that anybody can be taught. It seems to be, again, some people just have it. And I've always made the analogy of like the guy that's like up to bat, you know, bottom of the nine, two outs, you need a hit to win the game. And there's some guys that are just clutch that are like always going to come through. And that's not everybody. But I feel like the guys that are really notable killers, like they all seem to share that trait.
Yeah.
That like when it's time to go, they rarely, if ever, make a mistake.
Yeah.
And I think that separates a lot of good hunters from great hunters. You could be a really good hunter and get close to deer and see deer and have opportunities, but if you don't kill them, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, man, I agree with everything that you said. However, I feel that the biggest, most like impactful category, it's not necessarily a human trait, but it's a category, is the amount of time that people put into, you know, locating and identifying, right? Like for me, I feel that if I put more time, as in hours or days, on the main farm, checking trail cameras, scouting, you know, or going down to the public here where I hunt and checking the, you know, putting up trail cameras and scouting and more time in the tree stand, even during the fall, you know, both on and off season, then that correlates into having more opportunities at, you know, bigger, more mature deer, because you just have a blanket effect, really, or the fact that you can understand what the deer are doing in the specific area that you're putting more time into. And I always use this as a, I'll use this as an example. You take a hunting celebrity or someone with a hunting show that we all know that they have thousands of acres of highly managed land with a shit ton of, you know, food plots and habitat improvement work where there are big giant deer on this farm because they're, you know, they're farming them or whatever you want to call it. You know, they're holding big deer. They're on their farm all the time. They're checking trail cameras all the time. They're doing whatever they need to do to locate and identify these deer, keep them on their farms. You give that same farm to a guy who is on it once a year. And yeah, he may be able to pull, you know, pull some of the deer off, but he won't do it in a consistent manner than the people who are on that property all the time, you know, spending their life basically doing it. I just feel sure. that. I just feel that for me, that the category of time has the biggest impact in how people are going to be successful in hunting. So that's my soapbox.
I used to be a very firm believer in that, and I still do. I mean, there's no questioning the fact that, like, I always compare deer hunting to gambling, right?
Right.
I mean, the more times you throw the dice, like, the more likely you are to get lucky. You're probably going to lose a lot along the way, but I mean, your odds simply go up the more time that you spend in the woods. However, I mean, I know plenty of people that spend a lot of time hunting and don't kill very many deer.
Yeah.
So I believe that there's more to it than that. I would say that if I had to put the amount of time you have to hunt versus the quality of land that you have to hunt against one another, like, I think the quality of land that you have to hunt is far and away a more influential factor in your success.
Yeah.
Because you can have all the time in the world, but if you got a shitty spot, you got a shitty spot.
Yeah.
You know, there's no two ways around that. And not every piece of property is created equally, you know, when it comes to, you know, obviously there's the easy things, just like the amount of habitat that is on it, the amount of food that is on it, but also the access to that land, the terrain and how it funnels or doesn't funnel animal movement. You know, there's a lot of variations between pieces of property. And I know guys that hunt big pieces of highly managed property, but they're just a real pain in the ass to hunt.
Yep.
And, you know, it seems like they're not as successful as they should be based on, you know, from the outside looking in, it's always like, oh man, that must be a great spot. But then you talk to the guys that are on it and it's like, yeah, it seems great, you know, when you look at it on a map or whatever, but in reality, it's a lot more difficult. And then there's some spots that are just easier to hunt than others. There's some trees that are going to produce every single year. I remember there was a guy years ago back in the hunting net days that hunted here in Illinois, and he had just the absolutely most amazing little piece of 20 acres or 30 acres, whatever it was, with a funnel on it, like a creek bottom that ran through it. It was all field with one little creek bottom. He had a huge, like, off limits forest reserve on one side that had no hunting at all. And it was a huge piece of timber. And on the other side was this giant, like, 2000 acre private farm that had very little hunting pressure on it. And he sat right in between them on this little creek line. And every year he would basically sit the same stand every day from November 1st until whenever he killed a freaking giant deer. I mean, he was killing, let's say, between a 150 and a 180, like clockwork, every single year out of the same tree, you know. So, and everybody kind of looked at him like, oh man, this dude's an awesome hunter. And there's no question, the guy was smart. You know, he wasn't an idiot. He knew where to sit. And eventually, if he sat there long enough, a good buck was going to work through that creek bottom. And he was a killer, and he was able to get the job done. But it's also, you know, it wasn't the same as what we think in our minds is what's happening of, you know, going out and spending all this time scouting and hunting and figuring these animals' patterns out and outsmarting them. It was kind of like, I found the spot, and if I just sit here long enough, a deer is going to come through and I'm going to kill it.
Yeah.
So there's multiple ways to skin that cat, but I always, you know, I like to believe that certain pieces of property, they just hunt easier. Maybe they hunt bigger. The deer are a little bit more predictable in their movement and in their habits. And you also run into the genetic factor, right? I mean, I killed freaking 5.5-year-old deer this year that was 142 inches, right? Put me on a farm with much better genetics. Maybe that deer's a 180, right? And then people are like, oh, Justin's hard. He's awesome. He killed a giant buck, you know? But I mean, but the reality is, like, I was talking to some of my friends about this recently. I think, like, three of the last five bucks I've killed have been 4- and 5-year-old deer. I don't think one of them's gone more than like 145, you know. But if I was on a farm with awesome genetics and those deer are 160s or 170s, I think people would look at you differently, which is an interesting thing, right? They look at the number of inches that you kill as your prowess as a hunter. So let's talk about, you know, whether it's the Lukoskis, the Kiskis, the Drurys, like, those guys got it figured out. There's no doubt about it. They've got a recipe for killing big deer they figure it out and they do it as good as anybody else in the world. But the reality is most of the time they're killing 5-year-old deer, you know, but the 5-year-old deer is 200 inches, not 140. So then somebody looks at him and says, oh, well, you're a better hunter than the guy killing the 140-inch 5-year-old, even though that was maybe the biggest deer on your farm.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting way that we look at things. And it makes sense because it's the only real tangible way for people on the outside looking in to judge, right?
Is, you can't measure the rack. You can't measure an experience.
No way.
I mean, I can measure my experience, but I can't measure Justin Zahr's experience on the deer that he had shot this year. So what do? Sure. We go to inches, and the bigger the inches, the better the hunter. And that is laughable, if you ask me.
It is. And it bothers me sometimes when I see people lead into their stories.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That pisses me off more than anything. That's pure rage hits me. Booner alert, 170 inches hit the ground. It's like, anything else you want to tell us? Nope. Here's my hashtag of sponsors. Anyway.
Sometimes I get in trouble for not hashtagging enough sponsors.
Oh, boy.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's quite the world. Quite the world.
We're both whores, though, Zahr. We're
oh, sell out. I sold out long time ago, buddy.
We're both still whores.
Just living in the lap of sold out luxury.
That's right. All right. So there's that part of the BS session. Now, 2021. All right. It's like 4 days away or whatever it is. What's your goal? Do you have any goals or things that you want to accomplish in 2021?
Well, I'm going to start off 2021 by actually going on a late season bow hunt in Kentucky.
Oh, nice.
So like the 1st through the 4th, I'm going down there. I went in early December down there for a couple of days, and I managed to get into a bunch of poison ivy again for my second time. So 2 trips to Kentucky, 2 trips to the doctor for poison ivy. And so this second time around, I did not think you could get poison ivy once the leaves have fallen.
Oh, dude.
And I found out that is incorrect.
That's a rookie mistake.
I'm a rookie, clearly. Yeah. So I climbed up a tree with a bunch of vines on it, and I was like, there's no leaves. We're good.
Yeah.
And it was like 50 degrees that day, so I was in a t-shirt when I was hanging my stand. And I was bear hugging this tree with all these vines on it. So needless to say, I came home and I looked like a leper for a while, and got on some prednisone and knocked that out. It's just about healed up now. So I'm ready for my next trip back to Kentucky. I will not be climbing any trees with vines. I'm starting the year off there. Goal wise for me, it's really going to be very similar to last year. I want to try to get my son on a turkey during youth season here in Illinois. We tried last year, but man, the weather was just horrendous. It was cold and windy and snowy. It just really was a bad youth season. So I'm hoping to get him on a turkey this year. I really don't even care if I shoot one. I may just kind of burn my turkey season trying to get him on a bird this year. So I'm going to start off there. Going into the fall, I am going back on another antelope hunt. I was hoping to do a mule deer hunt with Dustin this fall, but what happened was, because of COVID last year, he had a bunch of people that canceled their hunts that just didn't want to come, and they pushed into 2021. So he just didn't really have very many openings. He could have squeezed me in by myself, but kind of wanted to go with a group of guys. So we ended up pulling the plug on the mule deer trip, and we're just going to do another antelope hunt. It's just a blast. It's a good time. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of laid back, going with a couple guys that haven't gone before. I'm going to start off my year in August doing that. Hopefully our elk trip, which got canceled this year and pushed into 2021, hopefully that happens this time around. So I'm really hoping to shoot my first elk this year. If I had to pick like my number one kind of goal, it would be that.
Yeah.
And then coming home from that, Illinois kind of business as usual. I really want to try to find, I really want to kill another 150 inch or better deer. There was only one on any of my farms this fall. My buddy Mike killed him in October of this year, so that cut my journey for a 150 short. I want to try to find another 150 to shoot this coming fall. So those are my goals for this year. What about you?
Man, so I don't know how many times I said this on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, but you know, my plan is to cash in some points in Wyoming for an elk hunt. So I'd go to a pretty good unit, I guess. Well, the COVID hit and things changed, and or maybe some regulations changed in Wyoming, and point creep hit pretty bad.
Oh,
so,
dude, it's terrible right now.
Yeah. So I was looking at Go Hunt, I think it is.
Yeah. How many points do you have?
I'll be drawing. If I draw this year, I'll draw with 7. So okay.
That's doable.
Yeah.
I think that's what Aaron Warburton had this year when he drew his tag. It was 7,
yeah,
if I remember.
So anyway, I end up, I actually called Dustin and I was like, hey man, tell me, you know, fill me in on some units. Cause I don't want to hunt in a grizzly bear country. I don't think I'm ready for that quite yet. So sure. I'm heading far.
So that's more like, that's like the Western
yeah,
part of the state, right?
Yeah, Northwestern yep. part of the state.
Yep.
So anyway, I start looking through Go Hunt and 100% draw and 85% draw or 82% draw from last year to this year is now like 7 and 54, those units. So, mm-hmm. Oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do now. So the two units that I've been really looking into are now higher. And the point creep not only hit that, you know, the units that I was looking into, but looking into, you know, like all units everywhere. So I'm going to have to kind of rethink what I want to do. If I want to do this Wyoming thing, cash all my points out, or if I want to go to Colorado again and, do, you know, a general tag in, over the counter tag in Colorado again, which, that's tough to hunt.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to find a unit, cash my points in, and go. So go to Wyoming. I'll probably schedule another call with Dustin to kind of get his input and see what he has to say about it. Or I think go hunt.
I'm going to see him tomorrow night. I'll ask him.
Oh, nice. So yeah, I'm going to go do that and see what happens. Then I'm going back to South Dakota. You know, before all this, I'm going to try to turkey hunt, you know, when it comes, like I always used to be on point with turkey hunting. Like, hey dude, I gotta go. But now that my kids are in school, we don't, the Iowa second season starts on a Friday and I can't like just leave to go turkey hunting unless I schedule this. Cause before my kids were in school, my wife and I and the three kids would go down to my parents and my mom would watch the kids and me and her would go turkey hunt. Well, she's kind of past turkey hunting, right? I think for a while there it was, hey, I'm going to hunt with my husband because he turkey, because, you know, he goes. It's something for us to do together. Now we're far enough along in our relationship where she just doesn't give a shit anymore. So why do something that, you know, I don't like to do, you know, 100%. So I don't think she's going to go turkey hunting with me. And it's back to just me by myself. But my goal is to try to get out and kill a turkey with my daughter with me, which means that I have to wait. I have like 2 days to do it then, right? I have,
yep.
And because then she goes back to school. So I might pull her out of school on a Friday and take her turkey hunting with me. We'll see what happens. But turkey hunting, I'm going to do a lot more fishing this year. That's the goal anyway with my two oldest kids. And then elk hunting, potentially in Wyoming. If not, I'll go to Colorado. Then South Dakota mule deer hunt, which I'm falling in love with that hunt, dude. It's not like I'm seeing magazine cover mule deer all running around all over the place, but I'm seeing good deer on public ground and lots of deer on public ground. And I don't know about you, but when you strike out on a hunt a couple times and you just want to go back because it's almost, it just keeps adding gasoline to that fire where now.
Why do you think I'm going to Kentucky in January?
3 times in 1 year, right?
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my goal, man. And then it's going to be probably business as usual in Iowa. And then, you know, my wife probably never should have let me go to South Dakota in December, because now I know that she's okay with it. So that's just more of the envelope for me to push her and her.
Pushing the envelope.
Yeah, push the envelope and see what I can get away with, and maybe find a run and gun 3 or 4 day hunt in a state like Missouri that has over the counter tags, or, you know, Nebraska, or, you know, another over the counter state where I can jump onto a piece of public and just shoot something, you know? So
sure.
We will see what that brings. But man, I just, going back to South Dakota, I love that place. I don't know if you, have you ever hunted South Dakota?
I have not. Drove through it on my way to Wyoming. So
yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. Well, this might be one of those places where you need to look into, because it's awesome. Yeah. And for those who are listening, don't look into it, because it's not that really that cool, right? So.
Don't worry, Dan. You can't do any more damage than the hunting public's already done.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Oh,
everybody I talked to is like, man, the public was getting hammered this year.
Yeah.
Like worse than ever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yep, it certainly was.
Yeah, that's a fact too. And it obviously the COVID, but I wonder how much of this new kind of media that's out there, this public land focused hunting that everybody's doing. And obviously the hunting public played a huge role in it, but I wonder how much of that this new media has truly impacted the way and where people hunt.
I would say quite a bit.
Yeah.
I would say quite a bit. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I haven't been hunting public land all that long. I think maybe 4 years now.
Yeah.
You know, prior to that, I had much the same opinion that a lot of people did, which is like, oh man, I don't want to go to public. It's overrun with people. Your hunt's going to get screwed up. There's no deer there. Like, screw that. Why would I go if I don't have to? Type of mentality. And then I had a few friends that were doing it here in Illinois and having some good success and seeing deer. And finally I got up the nerve to go do it. And I was like, oh man, this is actually a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And that was right around the time when those guys were just getting started. And you know, since then it's been a hell of a boom in terms of, you know, the amount of people doing it. I know a lot of people that I talked to that have been doing it for a long time that are like, man, the last couple years it's just like nonstop. And it's funny because I remember years ago doing the trade show circuit and talking to Jared at Whitetail Adrenaline, right? Because I mean, the reality is, like, what THP is doing right now is what Whitetail Adrenaline has been doing for the last decade or more.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
They just took it and put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Jared and his crew are the original guys. And I remember Jared telling me one year, like, man, he goes, some of these spots in Kansas that I've been going to for years that we never see anybody, all of a sudden we roll up in there, there's a bunch of trucks all over the place, and everyone's got Whitetail Adrenaline stickers in their back window. He's like, what have I done to myself?
Right.
You know, and it's one of those things where, you know, the guys that have been successful on public for a long time, like, they've always kept it on the down low.
Yep.
You know, they weren't posting about it. They weren't telling all their friends about it. They're kind of trying to keep that a secret. You know, and the cat's out of the bag now. So there's still definitely, you know, some good hunting to be had out there. There's no doubt about it. And I love the fact that it's, you know, getting some of the younger generation, you know, more inspired to get out there and go do this stuff. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? You know, it might be a little bit more competition out there, but it's interesting to me. And I think you and I have touched on this before, how, you know, hunters as a whole and the hunting community and the hunting industry have long said, like, we're stronger if we stand together. We need more numbers. We need more people. We got to recruit more hunters. But I'd always said, like, where are all these hunters going to go? Because all these new people that we all want to recruit in there, like, who's out there volunteering to be like, yeah, man, you just come hunt my spot with me.
Right.
Nobody's doing that.
Right.
Right. So lack of access to land has always been one of the most challenging parts about getting people into hunting. Like, someone's like, hey man, I'm super interested in hunting. I want to learn how to do it. And maybe people are like, yeah man, I'll help you. I'll get you out there. I'll bring you to my spot and let you shoot a doe. But
right.
You're not going to shoot the, the big buck that I've been, you know, waiting on or passing or doing food plots and all this other stuff, trail cameras, scouting to try to shoot this buck. People aren't eager to just say, hey, new guy, come out and, you know, shoot this animal. And now I think what we're seeing is a lot of those folks are getting, you know, tuned into the whole public land thing. I think, you know, for long-term sustainability, like how many of those people that really get into hunting are going to go try this, have a bad experience, you know, for one reason or another, lack of animal sightings, too much pressure from other people, whatever. Are they just going to give it up?
Yeah.
And be like, you know what, this sucked. I tried it for a couple of years, cost me a lot of money, and I didn't kill anything, so I'm done. I mean, I don't know if this boom is going to last forever, but, you know, it is what it is. I think overall, all things considered, it's a good thing for hunting in general.
Yeah, I mean, there's turnover, just like in anything. I remember when I was a kid, man, I was diehard. When I grew up, I'm going to be a skateboarder. So what do I get for Christmas one year? A skateboard. And I wanted to just be that skate or die dude, bro, whatever. And I, you know, I rolled around my neighborhood on my skateboard. And then one day I stopped. It was like, I guess I'm not a skateboarder anymore. So there's that.
Yeah. Hunting is an interesting thing because it's something that we're so passionate about and, like I could never, the idea of stopping hunting just sounds like hell to me.
Yeah.
Like if somebody just forced me to stop, like it's the worst thing you could possibly ever do to me.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like I could give up pretty much any other hobby or pastime that I have. So it's always been an interesting thing to me. Like when people do give up, hunting, like they hunted for a while and they just like, don't do it anymore. Right. I'm like, what do you mean? You don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
How does that work?
How do you shut that off? Cause there's a lot of things I wish I didn't do anymore.
Right. So, it's an interesting thing, but like I said, all things considered, I think, you know, the influx of new people and people enjoying the public lands that are out there is overall a net positive. I think there's still some good opportunities to be had out there. You just have to work for them. You know, nothing's a gimme.
Yep, absolutely. And I tell you, Onyx has really shed a light to all those places, right? I mean, so if someone who's new wants to know where to hunt, the resources are out there for them to easily find public land these days.
Sure.
And as opposed
there's a tale of caution to be had there, though, because, you know, whether you use, you know, Onyx or HuntStand or HuntWise or any of the mapping apps now, you know, just because something is shown as being owned by the state or the public or the whatever doesn't necessarily mean that it's open to public hunting.
Yeah.
And I think there's a misconception there, especially like, so we were in Nebraska recently when our elk hunt got canceled and we were talking to the outfitter because I did the exact same thing that anybody would have done. I grabbed my freaking hunt stand and I fired it up and I started looking for pieces of public, you know, around the area where we were at just to see what was there. And I was like, hey man, this piece right across the street from where we're hunting is public. And he's like, well, it's really not. He goes, and there's been a lot of problems because it's owned by the state, but then the state leases it out through some sort of program, you know, so it's not actually open to public hunting. But what happens is somebody grabs hunt stand or Onyx or whatever and they click on a piece and it says it's owned by the state and they don't dig any further and then they just go. And then the people that have leased it, you know, are bitching and kicking them out and now they're having to post extra signs and do all sorts of stuff. There's still a word of caution that just because something is owned by a public entity doesn't necessarily mean that it's open to public hunting. And that's the one thing that those mapping apps haven't really figured out yet.
Yeah.
So you do still have to do some due diligence before you go getting yourself in trouble.
Double check, basically.
Yep. Just double check, of course. Yeah.
All right. So it's that time of the podcast where you call your shot. Where are you going to be successful? And just remember that bow hunting for elk you're going to Colorado, right?
Yeah.
I think success rate's like 7%.
Oh, thanks for that, Dan.
No, I'm just telling you, because I've been to Colorado two times and struck out.
I'm going on a swanky, fancy private ranch with an outfitter.
That's right. Outfitter. Okay.
That costs an arm and a leg. So my chances are pretty good.
Okay. You
know, it's definitely higher than 7%.
Okay. I got you. I feel you. All right. So,
call
your shots.
That's my reward for 11 years of busting my nuts with this show and this website and everything else we've been doing for really 12 years now.
Yeah.
So this is my treat to myself.
Nice.
Calling my, So that one doesn't count. That's an outfitted hunt. I'm not even, I'm just the trigger guy.
Okay.
That one doesn't count. neither does the antelope hunt. Those antelope are stupid.
Automatic.
Anybody can go kill. That's an automatic. That's a, if anybody wants to go on a Western hunt that's outfitted and you don't want to spend a gajillion dollars and you want to go on something that's fun, warm weather, super high success rates, go on an antelope hunt. It is a freaking blast. Get a bunch of friends together. Go enjoy yourself because it's about as much fun as you can have shooting a big game animal with a bow and arrow. So outside of that, that really just leaves my whitetails here in Illinois. Where and how am I going to be successful next year? It all depends on what deer survive until then and which exact farm I'm hunting. I'm going to go ahead and say the farm where I killed my second buck this year. There's three deer out there that are alive as of the last day or two when my cameras checked in. There's going to be a deer out there that's going to be 6 years old next year that I really would like to shoot. I can't guarantee that I'll shoot him, but I'm sure going to try my damnedest. So if I had to call a shot, it would be that deer. He's a big eight, clean 8-pointer, big 6 year old fat deer. Not going to score a ton like every deer I kill, but that's the one I'm after.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, so I'll call my shots. I don't know. I don't have enough information to call my shot on Wyoming yet, but South Dakota, I'm going to kill a mule deer. I'm calling my shot. I'm pointing at the fence. I'm saying I'm going to shoot a mule deer. Now, is that a doe?
A mule deer.
I'm going like, okay. I'm to the point now where I don't care if it has antlers. All I want is to shoot a mule deer so I can claim that I'm multi-species now at this point.
Ooh,
right.
I like it.
Right. All right. So mule deer, I'm going to shoot a mule deer. And then, so I'm 5 years deep on my run in Iowa for rut, you know, my rut vacation. I filled my tag the last 5 years and, I feel like I'm going to do it again this year. My gut feeling as of December of 2020 says that in November or late October of 2021, I'm going to do it again. And it's just cause I feel real confident on where the deer are moving. But just like you, I don't know really what that's going to be. Cause there's a lot of moving parts on the properties that I hunt. And what I mean by that is what deer stick around, what deer move, you know, every single year. Crop rotation plays a huge role in that, but I feel like I'm going to get it done again in Iowa. And like the Pennsylvania, Michigan guys are going, no shit right now. Like, duh, you should, you should.
Shooting fish in a barrel.
So other than that, man, it's just, and the other call my shot. Well, I'm not going to call my shot on that because I
hate calling my shots because I always end up looking like an asshole.
Yeah. Well,
in the end, because I never actually fulfill them.
But let's be honest.
I feel like it's bad luck.
Dude. Yeah. It could be bad luck, but let's be honest. We're both kind of assholes.
That's true.
So
one of my resolutions for next year to not be such an asshole. I'm not sure how I'm going to accomplish this yet.
You have kids, dude. It's impossible.
They are little bastards. And so speaking of them, Christmas morning.
Oh, here we go.
My 8-year-old gets a bunch of new Nerf guns, yep. Right? Everyone's opening presents. We're having a good time. He's already shot me a couple times. His brothers and sister, he shot them. I'm starting to get pissed. So I was like, look, Dick, stop shooting people with your Nerf gun. Okay? No more shooting anybody. We're about to have breakfast. We live streamed church because we didn't want to go and wear masks and everything. So I was like, just chill out with the Nerf gun. I'm standing in the kitchen putting batteries in some sort of toy for my daughter. And my son shoots me in the face with a Nerf gun.
Oh, boy.
Now, in his defense, he didn't mean to shoot me in the face. Nerf guns aren't the most accurate of things in the world. I was standing sideways. He's trying to shoot me in the shoulder. And it hit me, like, right in the temple as I'm looking down. Like, and I lost my shit.
Volcano Dad has appeared.
Dude, he was wearing shorts. He was wearing shorts and a T-shirt with no socks on. And Christmas morning was cold as hell. I grabbed his ass by the neck. I drug him outside. We walked outside down the gravel path on the side of my house, and I made him throw his brand new Nerf gun in the garbage. literally 10 minutes after he just opened it. I made him throw it in the garbage can, freezing cold, and then I made him go inside and sit on the couch. Now, I did secretly go back and take it out of the garbage. I was just trying to prove a point.
That's awesome.
I was pissed off.
Oh, man. I tell you what. So my kids, and some of these Nerf guns are pretty powerful, right?
Yes.
So they whenever they hit, they pack a little bit of a wall up. And so one day, my son and daughter were playing with Nerf guns, and they shot my mount. They were shooting my deer mounts on the wall, which, you know.
My kids do that a lot.
Yeah.
So, and they say, smoked them.
Smoked them.
When they hit them, smoked them.
Yep. So I grabbed both my kids. I took them out to the garage. And I said, listen, guys, I can't really be mad at you for shooting a mount, you know, a deer mount. We have a target in the backyard. So if you want to go shoot a deer, go shoot that. I got this little printout that also is in the shape of a deer. We can hang that on the door and you can shoot that. But if one of these mounts falls off the wall because of you, you're sleeping in the garage. This is where you will sleep from now on. Oh, man. My daughter started crying at that one. And my son was like, Dad, you can't do this. I'm like, bullshit. If you knock my mount off the wall, this is where you will sleep. And God, they stopped shooting my mounts. So
that is fantastic. Just, well done, parenting at its finest.
Yeah, right.
Parenting through fear. My favorite way to go.
That's how I was raised, man.
Hell yeah. And look at us. We turned out.
That's a fact. Hey, man, you have a good one. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Good luck to you. On the upcoming year, your trip to Kentucky to end up this season, and then whatever you got going on.
If anything exciting happens, I'll let you know, and then we can come talk about it.
Absolutely.
And the last time I was in Kentucky, I ran into some guy in the absolute middle of the woods, the middle of nowhere, and we were walking past each other. I was coming out, and he was going in, and he goes, not every day you run into a celebrity out in the middle of the woods. I'm like, Jesus, I can't go anywhere. Super nice guy, though. We ended up exchanging phone numbers, and he'd been hunting there for a while. Really, really cool guy. I will say that's one of my favorite things about hunting public land the last few years is some of the really cool people that you meet while you're out there doing it.
I thought you were going to say celebrity recognition.
No, man. I've met a lot of really just nice people.
Yeah.
Just nice, down-to-earth people willing to chit-chat and, you know, walk out together, give you their phone number if you need help dragging or tracking and stuff like that. It's just, it's been a cool experience.
Absolutely. All right, brother. Good luck. Have a good one. And
thanks, buddy. You too.
We'll talk to you later. Really appreciate your guys' time. Thank you for making 2021, or Jesus, I don't even know what year it is. Thank you for making 2020 an awesome year. We had our biggest year yet on the Sportsman's Nation, and all of that is because of you who are listening and take part in this community that we've built. Man, I really appreciate that. Huge shout out to all the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles, the Average Conservationist, Vortex Optics, Ozonix, Wasp, Lone Wolf Tree Stands. Please go out and support those companies because they've supported me all of 2021 or all of Jesus. All of 2020, and they make what I do possible. Therefore, you support them, and this symbiotic relationship continues. So, thank you, thank them, dude. I hope you had a great year. I hope all of your dreams came true, your goals were accomplished, and last but not least, sit down, think about what you want to accomplish for 2021, and then go out and make it happen. And dude, you could have a 2021 could be your greatest year ever, and you don't even know it yet. So good luck. Love you guys. And man, we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.